FM Rewind, Vow 88.1. Science-wise on Vow 88.1.
Today we're going to be talking about palm oil. Palm oil is the most... in the world's most widely used vegetable oil, found in countless products from snacks to personal care items. While demand for palm oil is souring, primarily sourced from Indonesia and Malaysia, it drives significant environmental issues like deforestation and biodiversity loss. In South Africa, palm oil is important for use in various industries, especially salty snacks, which have become household staples. As consumers increasingly demand sustainability, companies are re-evaluating their sourcing practices. Today, we will discuss what sensory science really involves, why palm oil is so controversial, and what these insights mean for the snacks on our shelves and the people who enjoy them. We are joined by Manzi Sishivilakazi to explore more on this fascinating intersection of science, consumer behavior, and sustainability. She's currently a PhD candidate in food science at the University of Pretoria and a sensory and consumer experience scientist by profession, specializing in consumer insights across the Africa, Middle East, and South Asia region. Sishivilakazi, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me here today.
It's actually like, are we actually glad that you are here to actually give us a lecture or educate us more about this topic? So without wasting any further time, for listeners who might not know, what exactly is sensory science?
So sensory science, it's basically a multidisciplinary field within food science. Mm-hmm. So where we use your five senses, so your five senses being the taste, sight, smell, hearing, and touch, to evoke, measure, and analyze consumer responses to food and beverage products.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very important division of food science because it helps us understand, you know, why certain products and why certain products appeal or don't appeal to consumers.
Mm.
And, even at the end of the day, even if something is healthy or it's sustainable or whatever good qualities it may have, if it doesn't taste good, people, unfortunately, are not going to buy it and consume it.
Mm. So what actually led to you actually taking this journey?
So this journey stems way back to high school, where mm-hmm. I was at a point where I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, you know, post-matric,
mm-hmm.
but I was very certain in, you know, the subjects that I enjoyed at school. So I really enjoyed the sciences and consumer studies.
Mm-hmm.
So then, you know, when the recruiters came to our high schools advertising, you know, these are different courses that you can embark on in university, I heard about food science, and that for me was my, you know, big aha moment.
Mm.
So I went and I did my homework to find out what is this food science all about, and it was just a perfect combination of all the things I enjoy, including cooking and baking. So it's a, you know, real really wonderful career to be in because, you know, you're solving real life problems and making a positive impact on society because people need to eat and they need to eat every day and they need to eat safe and nutritious food. So it's really a fulfilling career to be in.
Speaking about such a fulfilling career, what are some of the challenges have you experienced in this journey that you won't mind, that you don't mind sharing with us?
So looking at challenges that I've experienced, I think because it can be, when you're starting out in the field, such a broad field, knowing exactly what you enjoy and what you don't enjoy,
mm-hmm.
That can be a challenge. But how I've navigated that challenge is that, you know, when I first started working, I looked for, I stayed open-minded to start off my career in product development.
Yes, ma'am.
So product development was a great place to start in the sense that you get a good view and understanding on how to develop food products. And then from there, you can decide what you really enjoy. So whether it's the sensory side of things or the quality control side of things or actually product development. So yeah, I'd say the challenge is finding what you enjoy.
Mm-hmm. So what does being a sensory and consumer experience scientist look like day to day?
So day to day, it's really all about really understanding how people experience the food that they eat.
Mm.
So that entails running taste tests. So we have special laboratories, we call them sensory labs, where we have a group of people within either the research institution or within whichever company or business you're working in. And these people, we call them panelists. So
okay.
These panelists come through to the lab and they taste the products that we're busy developing, and then from there we can, you know, generate data to help guide the product development to make sure that the products we want to develop to launch eventually in the market are acceptable to consumers. So we look at, you know, again, using your five senses, looking, does it look good? Does it taste good? Is it acceptable on the palate, et cetera, et cetera? And also coupled with that, it's studying how consumers react to new snack products. So once we've developed, you know, the products in-house, then we take the products to consumers to better understand if this is, how, from a sensory point of view, is this product acceptable or not? And, you know, what would make them buy this product or not buy this product?
Mm-hmm.
And then we analyze that feedback to basically see what drives the consumer's choices.
Mm.
And then we work, you know, closely with product developers and other business stakeholders like marketing teams and insights teams to make sure that, you know, the science translates into foods that people enjoy and feel good about buying.
Mm. So are there any products that you guys are currently working on right now that you wouldn't mind sharing with us?
A lot, but unfortunately I can't share.
Oh, okay, okay.
We haven't launched those products in the market. So.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay. So why should one be drawn into the world of food science and consumer research? And what was your story? Of course, you've shared that a bit.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
If you don't mind repeating it for a listener just tuned in. So why should one be drawn into the world of food science and consumer research? And what was your story?
Sure. So I think people should be drawn to food science because it's such an exciting mix of science and everyday life. So like I said, we all eat and we eat every day. So the work we do has a, you know, a direct impact on, you know, people's health, their enjoyment and even the environment that we live in. So and consumer research just adds another layer to all of that. So it's really, again, understanding people's choices and, you know, what really matters to them so that the products that end up on our shelves are products that, you know, people will enjoy and benefit from.
Mm.
And like I said, my story dates back to high school where I discovered food science, and it was a perfect combination of all the things that I enjoy, which would be baking, the sciences, and consumer studies.
Mm. So earlier on, we spoke about the challenges that you have, you know, encountered along this journey. So also, it's very important that it's the Indian. We have to keep the balance. Would you mind sharing some of the highlights or some of the victories that you've encountered, and how did they change how you view this field that you're in?
Sure. So in terms of the highlights, I'd say definitely because, like I said, we work, a sensory science typically works very closely with the product developer. So just that journey from an idea or a concept all the way to the launch, meaning that once you see the product on the supermarket shelf, that it's such a rewarding experience that, you know, knowing that you were involved in crafting this product and crafting it in such a way that it's acceptable to consumers. Because it's very, very important that no matter how brilliant an idea might be, if a consumer says I wouldn't buy this, or I'm not going to buy this because it doesn't taste good, or it smells bad, or etc. etc. That's the joy of the job, just translating, you know, data into actionable insights, which eventually lead to products on the shelf. So yeah, being part of that journey is really fulfilling.
So what role do consumer insights play in shaping the snacks and drinks we find on the shelves?
So consumer insights are really the backbone of product development. So like I've said, these insights tell us what people like, what they don't like, and, you know, what do people expect from their food and beverage products that they consume. So, for example, insights can show whether consumers want any product with a lighter texture, or they want less salt, or they want sustainable ingredients to be part of that product. So then food manufacturers will then use that information to design products that not only taste great, but also fit into people's lifestyles and choices ultimately. So in short... consumer insights turn everyday opinions that we receive from consumers into science that shapes what ends up on the supermarket shelf.
So when most people think of food science, they think about making food taste good, of course. So how does sensory research go beyond that? You probably might have touched on it, but can you just, like, elaborate more on that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So taste, yes, is a very big part of the work that sensory science does. But, you know, it goes much further than that. So we look at the full eating experience. So from the moment that you open a chocolate, for example, how it smells, does it smell acceptable to you or not? When you take that first bite into the product, whether it's chips or chocolate or whatever, or a piece of bread, how's the texture of that product? And how does the packaging make you feel? So that full product experience is where, you know, a sensory science comes into play. And then whatever feedback we get from consumers, then we modify products accordingly to ensure that, you know, the consumer has a good and pleasant experience of a product.
It seems like there's a lot of work that goes into, like, crafting these products. How many hours do you guys spend in the lab just trying to make this product more proper?
We can spend months to years.
Are you serious?
I promise you.
Because
there's a lot of stakeholders involved in the product development process. There's a lot of trials, trial and error. And then there's also research that goes into the process. So it can take several months, up to a year.
So is there a deadline that you guys are supposed to, like, you know, submit? Or is there a due date, basically, for any product?
I wouldn't say there's, like, a due date. So it really depends on the business and the business objectives. So if a particular manufacturer aims or desires to launch a certain product by, let's say they want to do, like, a Valentine's range of chocolates, for example, then obviously you would try and meet certain deadlines so that by Valentine's your chocolates are out and ready on the shelf.
Interesting.
So hence I'm saying that process can take several months to perfect. Perfect the product, rather.
Personally, doesn't that get frustrating sometimes when you guys are not getting it right? doesn't it end up just, like, frustrating you somehow?
Yes and no. Yes, in the sense that we do work according to, you know, specific timelines. But it's also exciting in the sense that you're getting closer and closer to almost perfect, if not perfect, product that consumers are definitely going to accept and enjoy.
So pretty much, like, you enjoy the journey more than the final product, in a way.
Yes.
Okay. So how do food scientists uncover what consumers genuinely want and need, particularly when there can be a disconnect between what people say and what they actually purchase?
So as food scientists, we use a mix of tools to, you know, get beyond just what people say. So we run taste tests, as I've mentioned, in our special sensory labs. Sometimes we go out and observe shopping behavior. We do different types of research, like we use qualitative tools. So that's when we would typically, you know, either have interviews or focus group discussions with consumers just to dig deeper into, you know, why do you consume, you know, X amount of products or specific products, and, you know, what can company X do to make the products that you consume even better? So I know that, you know, sometimes consumers say one thing but choose differently in real life. So these tools and methods help us understand true preferences. So, for example, consumers will always say, yes, your product is interesting, I would buy it, but it needs to be affordable. So those are the kind of insights we keep in mind when developing products. So, yeah, it's really all about the combination of the science and the psychology behind the consumers to make products that people genuinely enjoy and keep coming back to purchase.
Okay. So what trends are you seeing right now in the food industry, especially here in South Africa and globally?
Sure. So I'd say health, sustainability, and local flavors are big trends at the moment, because, you know, consumers across age groups are increasingly prioritizing their health. So they're looking for snacks that are, you know, healthy and will not have a negative impact on their health or on their bodies. Also, with the younger generation, we're seeing now research has shown that they're more environmentally conscious. So in the sense of sustainability, consumers are looking for products that have been produced in a responsible manner. And then also, coupled with the point on health is clean labels. So consumers are now increasingly starting to read the labels of food products more. So it seems that the fewer ingredients, the better.
Okay.
Because consumers are you know, trying to move away from very, like, ultra-processed foods back again to the point about health.
Mm.
And then also local flavors. So maybe you've noticed in the market, like, whether it's certain yogurts or certain snacks, they're doing, like, they're capitalizing on local flavors. So consumers are looking for bold and exciting flavors, but they're also appreciating the local flavor. So, like, you'll see, like, things that are Durban curry flavored flavored or Burfi flavored drinks, etc., etc.
So what steps would you recommend for young individuals considering careers in food science or research?
So for individuals considering research, well, food science / research, so I would recommend that, you know, if especially for the ones that are starting out in the industry, they shouldn't be, you know, too fixated on getting the perfect first job.
Okay.
So accept or, you know, take whatever opportunity that may be given to you and explore and learn as much as possible in that role. And then, like I said, from there, you can start, it'll be easier to navigate into spaces that you enjoy more.
Mm.
I'd also highly recommend joining, like, professional networks. So I know most industries have, like, professional networks where you, it's either free membership or you pay a small fee to be part of the members. That's where you can, you know, learn, grow and network with other like-minded individuals, and you can, you know, further explore what other options you have if you're not really enjoying what you're currently doing. So we have organizations such as the South African Association for Food Science and Technology. So that's a great place to, you know, network and, yeah, meet people in the industry.
So it seems like you always constantly doing research, right? So I just wanted to know, like, out of curiosity, do you take time to debrief and, like, you know what, I'm leaving work outside, I'm just doing me right now and I'm just enjoying my time. Like, when you're out there probably going to buy some products, do you actually get the time to just, like, switch off and just do you?
Because
it seems like there's constant research. It's like you're constantly observing what people are doing, how consumers are reacting to certain products. Do you get time to debrief and just switch off?
I'd say yes and no. So typically yes, in the sense that, you know, when you're on vacation or you take time off work and school just to, you know, recuperate and reboot. So in that sense, yes, I do take breaks in that sense. But also, whilst taking breaks, you can't help but notice maybe how someone behaves in a store or notice that, oh, there's new products on the shelf. Because of the nature of my work, it's hard to switch off in that regard. It's always like observations and taking mental notes, if I can put it that way.
Ms. Balagazi, we just wanted, you publish work in, your published work is on palm oil sustainability in salty snacks. What sparked the need to investigate this topic?
So my interest in this topic came from, you know, noticing how widely palm oil is used in the food industry. But, you know, very little is known about its sustainability in the South African context. So back to my previous comment about trends in South Africa and globally, sustainability is a very big and important topic at the moment. So, you know, it's always good to, if you are working in a food manufacturing environment, to review the products that you use to determine if they are sustainably produced or not. And, you know, I just, from this, I wanted to understand what drives, you know, people's choices, how aware are they of sustainability issues, especially in the South African context, and how this could influence the way companies make and market products where they use they're using palm oil.
Okay.
Yeah.
So for listeners who might not know, why is palm oil such a common ingredient in snacks and why is it controversial? Mm.
So it is very common in snacks because it's a cost-effective oil. It's versatile and it has a long shelf life. So what that basically means from a cost point of view compared to other oils, it is relatively cheaper. So, you know, if you're manufacturing food products and you're using a lot of oil, you would consider going for the cheapest option available.
Yes.
And also it's versatile. So not only is palm oil used in snacks and food products, it's also used in cosmetic products. So it has a wide range of application. It also has a long shelf life. So in the food products that it is used, it does not oxidate quickly like other oils. So by oxidation, I mean where a product can go rancid because of the oil content. So if a product is going rancid, it means it's starting to have like an off chemical smell. So palm oil, you know, lasts long, so it does not have negative sensory impact on products. And also, you know, from a productivity point of view, that the amount of land that you need to plant palm oil plantations, it's much less land needed to get large volumes of oil compared to other oil crops where you need much more land to produce the same quantity of oil.
Okay.
And it's controversial, unfortunately, because it has it's known to have a negative impact on the environment and so a negative environmental and social impact, especially in those countries that produce it in, you know, large volumes and export to many, many countries all over the world. So Indonesia and Malaysia are the largest producers of palm oil globally. So these sustainability issues impact them the most. So from an environmental point of view, it's things like deforestation, where forests have been cleared to plant palm oil to plant palm trees. And that deforestation has led to a loss of biodiversity in those areas. And also emission of greenhouse gases, which has a negative impact on the environment, as I've said. And also from a social point of view, you do have instances, unfortunately, where there's unfair labor practices or farmers are not being compensated accordingly or not getting profits that are owed to them for the, you know, palm plantations that they have. And also in some regions, there's also child labor practices. So all those things make it, you know, an unsustainable ingredient, which why it has had a bad reputation over the last couple of years.
Hectic. So what role do sustainability and ethical sourcing play in the food industry today, especially in products like chips and crackers?
Sure. So, you know, sustainability and, you know, ethical sourcing are becoming central to the food industry. So for products like chips and crackers, it basically means choosing ingredients and production methods that have less impact on the environment, like, you know, responsibly sourced oils, waste reduction, and, you know, using eco-friendly packaging. So consumers are increasingly looking for foods that taste good and align with their values. So sustainability isn't, you know, just something nice to have. It's now part of how companies compete and how they build trust with consumers.
Just to take it back, in terms of the controversy around palm oil, right, has there been any sort of changes in terms of, like, you know, the situation at hand? Like, because, you know, child labor is also kind of like one of the things that pops out whenever we talk about palm oil. Has there been any sort of changes lately, recently, from your own research that you might know about?
There is a lot of research and work going on in those regions to ensure that, you know, there is a...
People are compensated properly.
Yes, all those negative impacts are actually turned around into positive things. So, and then they also get compensated accordingly if they adhere. So palm oil, there's a global organization called the RSPO. So the RSPO stands for Roundtable on Sustainable Palm Oil. So this organization is really driving the initiative for sourcing and use of sustainable palm oil. So palm oil producers do get certain incentives if they are adhering to the standards that are set by the RSPO. So in that sense, there is a lot of effort going into making sure that the environmental burden is lessened and also from a social point of view, that there's no more child labor.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Something being done.
Yeah, it's just some bit of relief. So how did you go about auditing salty snacks in South Africa? And what was the process and why did you choose that approach?
Sure. So essentially this process is the first part of an ongoing PhD study, which I'm, busy with at the University of Pretoria. So, salty snacks is a broad category. So the first thing I needed to do was to narrow down my search to specific snacks. So specific snacks being, potato and maize chips, popcorn, maize puffs, etc. So the main kind of snacks that people consume regularly. And I chose these snacks because typically they are the ones that use a lot of oil, as you can imagine. In the frying process, there's a lot of oil that is needed to fry chips. So thereafter, I then collected information from over 600 products across major retailers. So here I was looking at the ingredients, the labeling, and sustainability claims. So I was looking basically for each product. Is this product using palm oil? If it is, are they claiming to use sustainable palm oil or not? Mm-hmm. And if not, I just observed what other product claims are on the packaging. So what are manufacturers communicating back to consumers? And so I chose this approach because really it gives a clear and real world picture of what's actually out there on the shelves, rather than relying on assumptions or relying on information from websites, which is not always accurate. So this really helped me identify how commonly used palm oil is, how often sustainability is communicated, and where there's room for improvement, in transparency from manufacturer's side and consumer awareness.
Okay. So you looked at products across supermarkets, wholesalers, and even clothing stores. Why was it important to include such a wide range of retailers, and what challenges did that bring?
Sure. So including a wide range of retailers. So this was from, like you said, supermarkets to wholesalers and even clothing stores. So this was really to give a complete view of what consumers actually encounter and what's readily available to them. And salty snacks aren't sold just in one place. So I wanted to capture like a full landscape of the different types of stores in which you can buy salty snacks from. And then I guess that it wasn't too difficult to collect the data, but the challenge was in, managing this big data set now and standardizing, the data from all these different sources. But it was worth it because it showed patterns and gaps in how palm oil and sustainability are presented, across the market. So it was just for a full view of how consumers are receiving or have access to these said products.
Oh, okay. So what kind of information were you looking for on the packaging, and how did that help you answer your research questions?
So I was looking at the ingredient lists, looking for palm oil specifically, looking at nutritional information. So if palm oil was the main focus, but I did look at what else is being communicated on packaging, and then looking also at if there were any sustainability or ethical sourcing claims that are stated on packaging. So this, was helpful in understanding how transparent brands are and how often, consumers can actually see sustainability information when they are choosing what salty snacks to buy. And then, you know, by doing this analysis, we could answer questions, you know, about labeling gaps and opportunities for, you know, responsible communication to, you know, better guide consumer choices.
So why did you choose Johannesburg for your study, and how how might the way products are packaged and distributed in this area affect what you found?
Sure. So we chose Johannesburg because, you know, Johannesburg is a major hub where there is a wide variety of snack products that are available for consumers to buy. And this really is a reflection of national trends. And also the assumption was that because there's, you know, different types of stores of varying sizes, and also, you know, stores usually cater for people across different LSM groups and different nutritional needs. So, yeah, the way that the products are packaged and distributed here can affect, you know, visibility of ingredients and sustainability information. So, because, you know, some formats or smaller retailers may not always display, you know, the full details. So, studying this Johannesburg area gave us a realistic, you know, snapshot of what most South African consumers actually see or experience or have access to when they are shopping.
So as we went to these different shops and as you were conducting your research or your study, are there any concerns that you have that might have arisen as you were conducting your research?
Yeah, so when I was, you know, analyzing the different product labels and ingredient lists. So according to regulation, you know, you are supposed, manufacturers are supposed to specifically state what ingredients they're using in their products and also specify the type. So in the case of oils, you're supposed to stipulate what vegetable oil you are using. So for some labels, I observed where a product would just say vegetable oil and they won't say, are they using palm oil? Are they using olive oil, sunflower oil, etc.? So from a transparency point of view, that was an observation. Yeah, I think that was the main thing that stuck out for me. Or also like incomplete or very basic ingredient labels, when you know very well that there are quite a lot of ingredients that go into a product. Yeah.
Okay, so speaking about oil, what did you discover about the use of palm oil in these products, and were there any surprises on how different snack types rely on it?
So as expected, palm oil is widely used across the salty snack products, and specific more so for potato chips and maize chips. And we found that, you know, very few products carry sustainability labels. So not just about palm oil sustainability, so sustainability in general. So this really just showed us that there is a gap between, you know, the use of the ingredient and the communication around responsible use. So responsible communication, basically. There's a bit of a gap there.
So do you see a role for new technologies, perhaps AI or smarter labeling systems in helping manufacturers track and promote sustainable palm oil usage?
Yes, absolutely. So you know, new technologies such as AI and, you know, smarter labeling systems can definitely help, you know, the manufacturers track, you know, the source of palm oil more efficiently and ensure that it's sustainably produced. Because I can imagine that supply chain processes can be quite complex and complicated, and maybe it's difficult to track where this palm oil came from or how it was produced. So AI and, you know, smart labeling definitely there's an opportunity for use there. And also these tools can help make, you know, sustainability information more transparent and easier for consumers to understand. So something as simple as a QR code, because, you know, a lot of consumers are tech savvy, they do have smartphones or digital labels, you know, that can explain this what it means to be sustainable, because a lot of consumers firstly don't understand, or they find it difficult to understand what sustainability means and how it impacts them.
Mm.
So these QR codes can help with the education piece.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I feel that technology has a huge potential to, you know, to bridge the gap between responsible production and, you know, informed consumer choices.
Okay, so as a consumer, as I'm going out there shopping and doing everything, what piece of advice would you give us? You understand what I'm saying? Like, as I'm out there shopping, what a piece of advice like would you give us? What should we look out for whenever we buy products?
It's a difficult question because, you know, as consumers, we all have different needs.
Yes.
We have different preferences.
Mm-hmm.
So it really depends on what you're looking for. I think a general advice would be to read your labels,
sure.
Your ingredient labels, so that you can see, you know, what exactly am I eating?
Mm.
How do you feel about what you're eating?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, do these products meet your expectations? So, yeah, read, be more aware of the packaging before you eat. Just, you know, take
try
a few
to read.
Seconds. Read, what am I eating? What is it made?
Mm.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Thank you for that. So, looking ahead, what gaps remain in understanding palm oil use and sustainability in South African snacks, and what kind of future studies would be most valuable?
So I think, you know, while we know that palm oil is widely used because based on the results from this research that was published, and also, you know, again, looking at ingredient labels and sustainability labeling is limited, there's still gaps in understanding, you know, what are consumers' awareness, what are their attitudes, and what are their intentions, you know, and behaviors regarding sustainable options. So I think future studies could definitely explore how things like, you know, education, labeling, and marketing have an influence on choices, and also better understand how consumers perceive palm oil because it's the topic for the study, and things like test interventions, and then that would encourage... So basically test interventions that would encourage more sustainable snack consumption, and just better understand, you know, where consumers' minds are at regarding this topic.
Okay. So in closing, Ms. Vilakazi, where can people find or track your work, where if they want any sort of advice, career advice, or if they want to get some sort of inspiration for your study, from your study or your work, where can people find you?
They can find me on LinkedIn. So my LinkedIn name is Manzi Sishi-Vilakazi. And yeah, we can connect on there, and happy to answer any questions in the DMs.
Okay, so any advice for young people that actually want to head into the field that you're in, any advice that you would like to share with them?
I'd say stay open-minded. And always willing to learn, because there's so much to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Your university qualification prepares you for the field, but there's, you know,
so much.
There's so much to learn when you're practically in the field and developing all these wonderful food products. So, yeah, stay curious, ask questions, and absorb and learn as much as you can as you journey through your career.
Ms. Vilakazi, thank you so much for making the time to come through to the studio and educate us. Thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Sure. That was Ms. Vilakazi. It is 18:58 right now. We just only have 2 minutes to wrap up the show. If you have any, you know, last comments, you can hit us up at 0745779461, or you can call in at 0117179881. Like I said, it's 18:58 and we don't have as much time. It's time for us to actually make way for Low Focus. Tato is already on standby, but just like to thank you to Manzi Sishi for her insightful perspective, and to our listeners for joining us to discuss food science and sustainability in South Africa.
Science Wise on Vow 88.1
FM Rewind. Vow 88.1.